Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, live in a little sunnier Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Channel 83, 1 hour from now. It's remarkable we can keep doing Colin right, Colin wrong with no games, but we've got a dozen or so really strong Colin right, Colin wrong in 1 hour from now. Peter King later this hour, and Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how you're matching today, Joy. You are matching your furniture and the backdrop in your condo. Very well done.
I'm coordinating.
You
how
are.
Was your weekend?
It was good. Just try to keep active, keep moving, do what we can. A lot of good numbers out of New York City this morning. This is obviously a situation that any little bit of good news, you try to take it. Very encouraging news out of New York City this morning as key indicators drop. Still, social distancing is the key. I want to start with this. You know I'm a fan of Tua, the quarterback from Alabama. If he didn't have an injury, he would be the best player in the draft and the most influential. I think he's Drew Brees, left-handed, but the injury stuff, like Drew Brees had an injury early in his career, and the Miami Dolphins would not take a chance on Drew Brees. The New Orleans Saints did, and the Saints now are a top 5-6 organization in the NFL because they took a chance on Drew Brees, and the Miami Dolphins have been swimming in mediocrity and trying to find a quarterback because they would not roll the dice on Drew Brees. I've said Patrick Mahomes had a lot of injuries in college. The Chiefs now are the best team in the NFL. They rolled the dice. Jimmy Garoppolo had some injuries in New England and San Francisco. They're all in. They got to the Super Bowl. The reality is teams that have rolled the dice on quarterbacks with a few injuries, Carson Wentz, Philadelphia, are doing very well. You can't be scared off. But here's another thing why I like Tua. In my opinion, and any reasonable person's opinion, the SEC is not only the best conference in college football, the top 6 or 7 of the SEC is a mile better than anybody else. The Big Ten is second, and I'm not sure much past Ohio State it's that close. What does that mean? It means Tua is easier to evaluate than Big Ten players, than especially Pac-12 players and ACC players and Big 12 players. And I'll give you an example. And the reason being is because Florida, Georgia, LSU, Auburn, Alabama, now Texas A&M, the Mississippi schools, they've got NFL guys everywhere. So when I watch Tua, I'm watching it against an NFL pass rush and NFL corners and NFL linebackers. And I'll give you an example. This is when I really thought about it this weekend. So you know I'm a USC homer, right? You all think I'm a USC homer. Well, the last time the West Coast had a dynasty was Pete Carroll and USC. And first year, they were 6-6 and trying to find their way. The next year, they got pretty good, and they had Carson Palmer and stuff, and they were pretty good, and they beat Oklahoma badly in a bowl game. And after that, they had about 4 years, they were just money. 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, they played in 3 national championship games. They won 2. If you look at the drafts, once they got the ball rolling, because anybody out west will tell you the Pac-12 was crap during those years. Washington was awful. UCLA was awful. The Arizona schools couldn't get their act together. Chip Kelly wasn't at Oregon yet. Stanford didn't have Jim Harbaugh yet. The conference has never been weaker. But USC was great, and they were owning the West Coast. That was at a time that SEC schools didn't recruit the West Coast. So USC was literally getting 15 of the top 18 players in the West Coast. The conference was completely lopsided. So Pete dominates at Pete Carroll. Jeff Tedford at Cal was about the only pushback at all, and Pete was trying to get him out of the conference for years and eventually did. But go look at the drafts from 2004, 2005, 2006. 20 USC players were drafted in that time. 19 of them were overdrafted. Only Sean Cody is a guy, he was a second-round pick, and he was worth a second-round pick. I'm not even going to name names because I know half the guys. Everybody was overdrafted. Why? You couldn't tell how good USC players were. They were dominating non-NFL bodies. 19 of the 20 players, 2004 draft, 2005 draft, 2006, right in the heart of Pete Carroll owning all the West Coast talent. And he would cherry pick two or three players out of Florida a year, maybe one out of, you know, the Northeast, New Jersey. I mean, they were rolling. But you couldn't, it was harder to evaluate. Now let's go to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, last 4 years, has dominated a weaker conference. Texas can't get their act together with Tom Herman yet. I think they will eventually, but they can't. And the rest of the conference is, you know, it's mostly a mess. Nebraska left the conference. Texas A&M was there, left the conference. It's mostly really Oklahoma and everybody else. They've dominated it. And they also, like Pete Carroll, have great coaching. Bob Stoops is a great coach, Lincoln Riley. So if you look at the last 4 years and then look at the players drafted from Oklahoma to the NFL. Now, unlike USC, they don't have nearly as many first-round picks. A lot of the Oklahoma guys getting drafted are second, third, fourth, fifth-round picks. But of the 20 Oklahoma players drafted, one is better than his draft pick, Mark Andrews, the tight end, third round of Baltimore. He's over-delivered. He's clearly good enough to be a second-round pick. Kyler Murray, promising. We don't know yet. Joe Mixon, good. Second-rounder, he's been solid. But if you look at Oklahoma, I can argue about 15 of the 20 guys over-drafted. My point, it is incredibly difficult when you have a dominant, well-coached program, Oklahoma now, in a weaker conference. USC, Pete Carroll then, in a weaker conference. Because those schools have nothing but NFL bodies, and they're facing XFL-level players. It is harder to evaluate. I'll give you an example. Last year's NFL draft. Think about this. My staff did a good job to point this out to me this morning. So last year, and again, it's early to discover make or break guys 1 year out. But at last year's NFL draft, there were seven receivers taken in the second round. Four of them are better than all the first round receivers taken. All four went to SEC schools. Four for four. Four second-round SEC receivers are better than all the first-round wide receivers. You think it's a coincidence? So when I look at Tua and even Joe Burrow, I'm like, well, I know they're good because they beat great players and they beat NFL players. Now, I do think Joe Burrow had the greatest offensive line maybe since the 72 USC Trojans or the 95 Nebraska Cornhuskers. It may have been the deepest wide receiving crew I've ever seen in my life, and Joe Burrow had a lot going for him. But I know when Joe Burrow faced Alabama, he faced NFL players. And when Tua faced LSU, he faced NFL players. I think it's easier to look at Tua's tape, that championship game against Georgia. Again, that Georgia defense has 25 guys who will eventually play in the NFL. First and two deep. And then you look at the next 2 years, and I'm like, well, he's doing it on one leg half the time against NFL players. I think you go look at Pete Carroll, you look at Oklahoma, well-coached dynasties or really great programs in weaker conferences, how good is a running back that makes a corner miss when the corner's not a draftable player? I know when I watch Jerry Jeudy at Alabama, the wide receiver, who I think is the best wide receiver by a mile in this draft, I know when I watch him, and he turns on the accelerators, and he flies past the Georgia or Florida guy. I can look at the comp and go, he's flying past an NFL corner. I can't say that in the Big 12. I can't say that in the ACC outside of Clemson. When you watch Clemson players, again, they beat an NC State guy. They beat a Florida State program that's a mess. Virginia Tech's down. Miami's down. I think Clemson players, Oklahoma players now, I think they're harder to evaluate. It should be noted Oklahoma has something going for it. The Baltimore Ravens love Oklahoma players, so some of the Oklahoma players have been very fortunate. They've gone to one of the top three run, you know, organizations in the NFL. That helps them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Dak Prescott, for the second time, did not take social distancing seriously. He's the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, who I usually think has good judgment, not so far with a pandemic. But he had a party at his house, 30 people, and a buffet. I'm not sure there is a worse mode of operation than a buffet in a pandemic. He did it. I'm disappointed. But, you know, I think there's an explanation here. This, I think, is the primary challenge in America right now for governors and for this country. New York City, they're seeing people, neighbors, friends, and family pass. There is urgency. They are absolutely, on most occasions, aware of the severity of this situation. But Texas is big. 30 million people, not many deaths. Big state, big house, big yard. Dax bulletproof, right? 24. The people that are dying in California, 83% are old or an underlying medical condition. Dak is young, no underlying medical condition. He sees it differently. Why? Because we see how we live. It's very hard, though not impossible, clearly, to ask people who aren't experiencing pain and death to see pain and death and understand it. But if you look around at studies they've done on the more empathetic people in society, people who are bullied are generally more supportive of people who are bullied. People who have had tragic loss generally have more empathy for people who are suffering tragic loss. In this country, there are states, there are regions that aren't seeing what New York is. Texas is one of those. Now, maybe their peak is 2 to 3 weeks out and it'll get really serious and be a wake-up call. But I'm hearing people in Austin, Texas, they have a running track or a running park around the lake. Last time I was there, they have a river, and you can run on the side of the river, and it's wide open. And that doesn't mean, I'm not saying close it, but it's got all sorts of people, some masks, some not. That's their reality. In the state of Texas, 30 million people, a couple of hundred deaths is different. And I think this is the primary challenge. Do young people who are very healthy and potentially asymptomatic understand the severity of it? To people that don't live, 22,000 deaths in America, half are in New York City or New Jersey. Because if you don't live through something, you have to be, you know, pretty tolerant and curious to discover, oh, it could affect me. Most people not affected directly, they don't care about it. California, we've been very lucky. We've got a very, very progressive governor. They got on it, and San Francisco's mayor, LA's mayor have been fantastic. That's not the cases for all governors. Georgia's governor, I don't know you could catch it asymptomatically. So I think Dak is not the only one doing this. I think there's lots of young people. They may live in states that don't have it. They got a yard. They got space. They feel they're physically bulletproof. They see the stats. It's older people who have lung disease and diabetes, and they don't. This is going to be a rolling situation. We are not going to solve it by the fall. If the NFL season does work, there are going to be waves. We're going to have to manage it. We're going to have to work together. But instead of just banging on Dak, and I think it's really bad judgment, I think this is a primary challenge. And by the way, it's much easier to get people to isolate at home in bad weather. We're moving out of the spring here in about 2 weeks. What happens when it gets sunny all over the country? And you're being told as job loss mounts, stay inside. That's going to be a much tougher task for politicians everywhere.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Three-time National Sports Writer of the Year, Football Morning in America, NBC Sports. Joining us now, Peter King, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. He will have his mock draft next Monday. I think I'm going to have mine tomorrow. We'll figure it out. So I found it fascinating this morning. I'm going to throw, a crazy trade at you. Ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Chargers, Tom Telesco, who you note in your column, please read Peter's column. It's very interesting. He's a poker player. So he goes out and gets Beluga, the left tackle, and he gets Trey Turner really early in March. Why? Because he's trying to signal to Tom Brady, hello, you'll be safe here. They felt to the very end they were going to get him. They didn't. He also makes a very interesting move, stay with me, Peter, to get Chris Harris, a very good corner. But yet they've already got a great corner in Casey Hayward and a very good number two corner. So corner was not a need in Derwin James coming back to play safety. Why did they do that? Because then they know that seven draft picks cannot make this roster right now. They did it because they know Detroit needs a corner at three, and they can couple multiple picks and one of their corners now, Hayward or King, to get a team desperate for a corner, Detroit, and get their spot in the draft and get the quarterback they like, because I'm told they absolutely have a quarterback they've decided on. What do you think of my nutty theory?
It's as logical as any nutty theory this time of year. And, you know, when I saw them get Chris Harris, look, last year in the NFL, teams played three or more corners on approximately 71% of the offensive snaps. And so, you know, in essence, your nickel corner, and Harris has been a very good one. He can play anywhere, but he's been a very good nickel corner. You know, he's essentially a starting player. You know, he's going to play maybe 700 or 800 snaps this year. And, you know, it's folly to think that your top three corners, that none of them is that all of them are going to be healthy for 16 weeks. So be that as it may, I think that it's an interesting theory in part because I don't expect Detroit, if it even has a glimmer of a good shot to trade down, I don't expect Detroit to stay at three.
Yes.
Now, obviously, you need a trading partner. And, you know, right now, if you look at Miami and the Chargers at 5 and 6, what are you thinking? One or both of those teams is going to take a quarterback. And so right now it's a game that they're playing. I don't know if, you know, I've heard that there's great regard for Justin Herbert inside the Bengals, inside Miami, and inside the Chargers.
Yep.
But also, obviously, you hear about Tua and Miami, and I don't know about Tua and the Chargers, okay? So without being sure of if the Chargers absolutely want a quarterback in this draft, then that makes sense. But I want to remind you of one thing.
Okay.
In the last three drafts, Tom Telesco has not made a draft weekend trade. So that's 21 picks, no trades. Now, he did have a supplemental pick 2 years ago, and he used his original 7 to trade, I think, for Cardale Jones. And so, you know, it isn't true. He has not made any trades involving draft. I'm saying that he's not made a draft weekend trade. He basically had 21 picks and picked them all. He hasn't moved up, hasn't moved down.
Yeah.
That isn't to say he can't do it. He might do it.
Yeah.
But
two years,
he's a little bit Gettleman-ish in that regard.
Yeah, I was in the war room 2 years ago. He did try to make a draft trade. I'm not going to say what it was, but it was a lineman in the SEC. I'll just say that. He did try to engineer it, but could not get what he wanted in return. I think I can say that now 2 years post. So to your point, he doesn't, but I was there when he was trying to engineer what I was hearing him scrambling. And I think he just uses great discretion. Now, I want to go to this.
Yeah.
Jordan Love, to me, is fascinating. Jordan Love, yeah. Sophomore year, is great. His coach, who has a college-winning record, leaves. He then inherits a coach with a losing college record, and his numbers erode. You can look at Jordan Love with the better college coach and make an argument, we got a star here. Or you can look at him last year with a coach who the last time he coached at Wisconsin, a great program, lost 59-0, bombed in Oregon State, and lost, won 30% fewer games in Utah State than the previous coach. My point, when I see Jordan Love, I see a great talent who lost a great coach, his numbers went down, and we're blaming the player, not the staff. What are you hearing on Love?
He's the most, one of the most polarizing players in the draft. You hear that that, you know, as one GM told me this weekend, now look, he's not Mahomes, but he's tremendously instinctive. He's an exciting player, and he really is one of these guys who, in the right system, like, you know, with an Andy Reid type, could probably be coached exceedingly well, and could turn into a good quarterback. Now, there are others who think, you know, I believe he was arrested, but he was not found guilty of marijuana use,
right,
leading up to their bowl game.
Yeah.
But nobody cares about marijuana now anyway.
Thank
it's
you.
Just, that's sort of the judgment test.
Yeah.
You know, it's not very smart when everybody's looking at you and your future is on the line to be doing something even remotely illegal.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And marijuana use is not looked upon nicely in the state of Utah.
Right.
So anyway, all I'm saying is that there are some people who question his judgment, but you're right, Colin. There's a lot of people in this draft who are fascinated by him. Look, you know, the greatest thing for him would be to go to a team where there is a quarterback in his 30s, and you might need a quarterback in 2 years. You know, like last year, get drafted by the Chargers or something like that. I worry a little bit. You know, some people said, hey, well, what about the Patriots? Well, you know, who knows? I don't know. But I just don't think it's really smart to think of Jordan Love playing in 2020, especially when you're going to have a mangled offseason.
Yeah. I can't wait for this draft. I think in a...
That's because nothing else is going on.
That's right. And I also...
We all got cabin fever. We're all going crazy. It'd be nice to have something. You
but,
know?
You know, Peter, I've said this, is I think the NFL draft is not just about labor accumulation. It's about hope. It's the only 4 days of the NFL season nobody loses. And everybody is absolutely sure their six-round pick is going to be a superstar. I think America needs hope. And I think if you can find telephone or businesses I can do on Zoom, you have to do them. Because we're not going to have, my gut feeling this morning is baseball season's done. That is not good for America. My gut feeling today is NBA is 70-30, not going to happen. When you talk to GMs around the league, I don't think this is a time to be precious. I think we have to go forward if you can with telephone businesses. Your thoughts?
Well, here's the thing, Colin. I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, general managers were really, really nervous about this. And this was before many of them even knew what Zoom video conferencing was. Okay? And I'm not trying to give them a plug, but Zoom has been absolutely phenomenal. Now, there are other applications that you can use. Like a lot of NFL teams use Microsoft Teams as well. But the thing about Zoom is that it has allowed teams to have the kind of meetings where you have 20 people on the screen and any of them can talk. It's not perfect, but everybody's, you know, I don't find many people who say, man, the scouting meeting stunk. You know, I think they're ready. And I also think, here's what I notice when I talk to 8 or 10 team people Friday and Saturday. You know what I notice? You know, that they now understand their role because they've seen people being forklifted into semi-trailers in body bags in New York at a rate of maybe 400 or 500 a day. And I'm not trying to be grotesque, graphic, anything like that. I'm just simply saying that it's a little bit silly to be complaining about not being able to get a second physical with Tua after the combine.
Right.
So that's why you haven't heard a lot of that in the last week or so, because I think that teams are fired up right now to give the fans and to give this country something that they always look forward to anyway. And now because there's a vacuum with everything else and nothing else exists, they understand that this is the only show in town and they're going to try to put on a big show.
By the way, 2 minutes left. Do you think the Patriots end of the first round? They need a tight end. Notre Dame has a good one. Or do you think they go quarterback? And I'll ask you the same with Green Bay.
Here's what I think. I don't know who the Patriots like. You know, because you never know. But I've heard that this guy Kmet is the kind of all-around tight end that would be an incredible fit in the Patriots system. Now, 23 is probably too high to take him, but Bill Belichick he's like John Schneider in some ways. He never made a trade he didn't like. So I could see the Patriots dumping out of that pick just the same way as I could see Schneider dumping out. And again, I'd be surprised if they took a quarterback at 23, but you know, we'll see. They're always a mysterious team. You asked about Green Bay. Green Bay wouldn't surprise me at all. If Green Bay loves Jordan Love, why not pick him? Because, you know, Aaron Rodgers has got, you know, a good 3 years left.
Yep.
And if you take Jordan Love in the first round, well, you know, maybe he's exactly like Aaron Rodgers, drafted in 2005, played in 2008. Could Jordan Love get drafted in 2020 and take over the job in 2023? Maybe.
Yeah. Also, Green Bay needs receivers. It's a loaded Green Bay.
Very much.
It's a loaded draft.
But you know what? I think if I'm Green Bay, I wait until I think a lot of teams are going to wait. You saw all these teams wait till the second round last year, and A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Terry McLaurin in the third. You had great receivers taken. Deebo Samuel in the second and third rounds.
Yeah, I had a scout the other day I read online said he thinks they're starting Pro Bowl-level receivers in the third and fourth round in this draft, and Green Bay needs them and could take a Jordan because they have a very good roster, but they need two receivers, and this is the draft to get them later rounds. Peter King, you know he's great. NBC Sports, Football Morning in America. Great stuff, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So Mark Cuban, NBA owner of the Dallas Mavericks, big fan of him, came on the show about 2 weeks ago. It was great. He said yesterday, it's not inconceivable to me that we are going to have an NBA with no fans. He goes, I'm being optimistic. I'm not a doctor, but I do believe we can play without fans. Brian Windhorst at the place I used to work says the NBA is looking at a 25-day window to return, and they know that would feature 11 days individual workout, social distancing measures, and then 14 days of team training before a return to games. I think the NBA can return July 1st officially and still get the season in. Because I think, I'll just tell you this, I think the football season could get pushed back to the first week of October, which would allow the NBA more room to operate. So start training camp July 1st. This whole thing's fluid. A month ago, I didn't think the NFL season or college was going to get pushed back. If you ask me today, I think there's a 25% chance. You move it back another month. You know, college, universities, move it back another month. But let me just say this. The NBA is uniquely qualified to play without fans. Because NBA players are performers. Most NBA players played AAU basketball. A majority of AAU basketball games are played in front of under 50 fans. They are. There's some all-star tournaments, the night games. Go look at the NCAA tournament. The conference tournaments on the weekend before March Madness. The early games. You know, Providence against DePaul at noon Eastern. Nobody in the stands. Go look at March Madness. The first two or three days of it. Early afternoon games. There's nobody in the fans. But basketball players are performers. And there is no equivalent to the Harlem Globetrotters in baseball or football or hockey or soccer. But it works in basketball. You're out there in an exhibition just performing for the crowd. And I think performers, the better the performer, the greater chance of surviving. Howard Stern's going to be fine through this. He just had his biggest interview in several years. He's a performer. Actors, actresses, Netflix, Amazon Prime are hitting it out of the park. They've never, ever have we had more performers. Instagram live shows, concerts on Zoom, Instagram, DJs. Performers can get through this because of all the digital platforms now that are available to do stuff through your home. Similarly to NBA players. We don't think of baseball players as performers. In fact, there's a way to play the game. They almost diffuse personality. The NFL, you have to memorize a playbook. It is choreographed based on the coach's needs and whims. Basketball's not that way. Go to New York City Rucker Park. Go YouTube it today. Those aren't basketball games. Those are performers. Go to the Kevin Durant Rucker Park video. That's not a game. He's a magician. He's doing tricks on a stage. Basketball does that. Basketball not only does it, but embraces that. So the idea that you just couldn't put NBA players in an arena and have no fans and they wouldn't perform, this has always been the performer sport. I would argue that an NBA game without fans would be loose, would be wild, would be fun, would be individualistic. I think it'd be harder to coach them because it would feel like, you know, you would feel like practice. And guys do it. People always talk about, oh, you should have seen Michael Jordan at practice. Oh, you should have seen Dr. J at practice. Oh, you should have seen the moves Durant does at practice. Guys are more willing as performers to roll the dice on stuff. And once you put fans in the arena, the coaches barking, the TV cameras there, you get a little more restrictive, perhaps. So I think basketball's ideally built for it. I think they would flourish in it. That said, it's probably under 50-50 if we're going to have an NBA season. The good news, it was already started, and you could start playoffs day one. Don't have to worry about the regular season, unlike baseball. Hadn't even started yet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, here we go. Colin right, Colin wrong on a Monday.
Where Colin was right?
Didn't like the L.A. Rams acquiring Brandon Cooks. I thought it was a franchise that overpays for star players and falls in love with guys that can run really fast and stars who can sell tickets. And now the Rams are taking a massive cap hit. They have traded Brandon Cooks to the Houston Texans. And the reality is they never needed Brandon Cooks. There was no point. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Gurley was a good wide receiver. They've got an accurate quarterback. They have a kid named Josh Reynolds. They've been really doing a good job developing. Receiving core is not an issue for the Rams. They have all sorts of guys who can catch. But the Rams years ago paid too much for Tavon Austin, and they paid too much for Brandon Cooks. Now they bailed. They gave a first-round pick and a lot of money to a guy that came in as kind of a one-trick wide receiver.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, Tom Brady admitted last week on Howard Stern, yeah, he made his mind up before the season. So I, all year on the Tom Brady thing, I had a 75% to 99% Tom Brady pie he would stay. And instead, he had a Tom Brady cake that was 100% made before the season started. Does it surprise me? Yes, because Tom's a creature of habit, and the Patriots were his habit. And Tom is smart, and the Patriots are the smartest organization probably in the NFL. And he's all about family, and the Patriots were his family. But in the end, he chose happiness and weapons, and I was wrong.
Where Colin was right?
Well, LeBron said last week, this season has no closure if we don't play. And many in the media have speculated that LeBron James actually, with an older body, would take longer to ramp up and be ready to play, and he doesn't really want this season. No, this is LeBron acknowledging, without really saying it, we've got an old roster. It's a bad draft. The cap is coming down because of revenue losses, and the free agency class stinks, and this is the roster I'm stuck with for the next year in Los Angeles, and other teams are deeper, younger, and will improve, and we're kind of what we are, and we need to play. So I think LeBron and him admitting it, this is a disaster for LeBron if he has to shut it down.
Where Colin was wrong.
Always loved Dak Prescott's judgment, Cowboy quarterback. In fact, never thought he had a good arm. I think he's a decent athlete, not special, not Kyler Murray, not Carson Wentz. But in the end, he had a party for 30 people in a buffet this weekend. Listen, I know. You're young, you got a big house, a big yard, you're in a big state. This is tough for all of us, right? Like, I get people wanting to go out and go for a run, and, you know, I get it. Like, I'm not the moralist police here. I think it's impossible to ask everybody to stay at home for the next 2 months as there's job loss and people as the warm weather in Texas begins. But I do think it's bad judgment, and it's a bad look, and it would be one thing. I support Dak throwing to a couple of players that have some social distancing. Having a party for 30 at your house and a buffet, that's just not good. I can't defend that.
Where Colin was right?
One of my favorite young players in the NBA, Jason Tatum of the Celtics, came out this weekend and said Steph Curry, quote, changes the game and is a top 20 player ever. Hallelujah. Folks, he's the best shooter in league history. And I would argue the best ball handler in league history. How can you be two of the fundamental three to four things that matter most in basketball and not be a top 20 player of all time? College and pro basketball looks different today than 10 years ago because of one player, Steph Curry. Three titles, two MVPs, the only player to have a unanimous MVP, and that includes Michael Jordan. But there's always been this pushback on Steph Curry because he's kind of small, there's a lot of finesse to his game. You know, he grows up in a fairly privileged family, and maybe he loses some credibility in the league, whatever. But Jason Tatum, a dookie, gets it. You can't be the best shooter and ball handler in league history and go, you know, he's good. Three titles, two MVPs, one unanimous. He's absolutely a top 20 player and one of the greats all time.
Where Colin was wrong.
I have defended Texans head coach Bill O'Brien for years. I thought he did a good job at Penn State post-Paterno, and he gets to the playoffs. I can defend him no longer. The Brandon Cooks move is bad. It's a bad move. He's expensive. The Rams wanted to get out of the contract because he's considered retirement, several concussions. He's a one-trick pony, a speed guy. And also, the Texans already have Will Fuller, can't stay healthy. Kenny Stills hurt three games last year. Randall Cobb in Green Bay had a lot of injuries. It's a bad move. And also, it's the deepest wide receiver draft in a long time. That's what everybody's saying, right? Why would you give up a second-round pick where you could get a great starting wide receiver for almost no money without the concussions and perhaps a multitude of more routes on his tree? I don't get it. I've defended him, but that's just a bad move as a football guy.
Where Colin was right.
George Kittle, all-world tight end for the 49ers, said, quote, "Are you people crazy? I've had four quarterbacks here in San Francisco. Jimmy Garoppolo is easily the best." He said this weekend, "There's nothing to talk about. Jimmy G's the quarterback. He's a hell of a quarterback. We don't get to the Super Bowl without him. I caught 85 balls for 1,100 yards with him." This is what I don't get about Jimmy Garoppolo. NBA's got style points. Baseball's got stat points. NFL's about winning. Even Kyle Shanahan, a brilliant offensive mind, couldn't win games without Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jimmy Garoppolo last year got to the Super Bowl. Both tackles missed games. Their Pro Bowl fullback missed games. They had a myriad of injuries at wide receiver. He also had to, in the middle of a season, get Emmanuel Sanders and figure out how to have some timing with him. Jimmy Garoppolo was asked to do a ton last year. Oh, he's also in the best division in football. And he's 21-5 as a starter, and you're on him because he had a bad fourth quarter in the Super Bowl? I don't get it. George Kittle didn't get it either.
Where Colin was right.
Oh, Rex Ryan said two dumb things in 1 week. He's doubled his average. I've never been a Rex Ryan fan. I think he's a really capable but loud defensive coordinator. He called Amari Cooper a turd. Amari Cooper may not be as good as many want. He's a great guy. He's a great teammate. He's a great kid. Again, there have been guys in this league you could maybe call that. I probably wouldn't, but there's been some. Amari Cooper is one of the nice guys in any room. He's a great lubricator of a locker room. Secondly, he said Belichick couldn't win if he had Geno Smith. Well, all right, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, Belichick in his fourth year in Cleveland went 11-5, and they didn't have great quarterbacks there either. Let's be honest about Rex Ryan. He's loud, but mostly wrong all the time.
Where Colin was wrong.
Netflix show Tiger King remains the number one show in America. They've now put a bonus episode out last night. Fox and TMZ tonight are doing a one-hour special investigating the loose ends. The American public, inexplicably, has fallen in love with a bleached blonde, mullet-wearing zookeeper who collects tigers. And you love him, you can't get enough of him, and yet the Tiger King himself has not seen an episode yet. I got two more.
Where Colin was right.
L.A. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn told Peter King this week, "We are legitimately bullish on Tyrod Taylor." Folks, stop getting embedded, sports media people, trying to be right. In the last 45 games, Tyrod Taylor has a better passer rating than Cam, a better completion percentage than Cam, and a better winning record than Cam, with less people around him and a worse head coach. Tyrod Taylor wins games. Look at his last 45 games. With two rebuilding franchises, one more than Cam. And he's also, for the record, healthier than Cam.
Where Colin was right.
Finally, we've said for years, baseball, the NBA will come up with an idea first. The NFL will get it right, and baseball will make the most money out of it. And last night, the NBA had a game of horse. It was not great. Probably better on a Zoom than a national TV network. But I will say this, is that this is what the NBA has always done. They come up with crazy ideas. There were the sleeves on the shirts. There was the new ball. They've never been rigid. They always adapt. They always evolve. And, you know, I what can I make of the horse game? It's not a topic. It was pretty painful. But it really does speak to what the NBA's always been willing to do. Roll the dice, which is why I believe that centralized location idea. I think they do it in Vegas in 1 second.